Season 3, Episode 18, We Was Robbed. It opens up with a DOA in an alley and two uniformed cops, one that we see quite a bit, Shannon, say that they chased the suspect.
Is Shannon his first name or his last name? What do you think?
I think it's his last name.
I think so, too, because it's probably what it says on his uniform.
Also, I kind of feel like, and this might be mean, I feel like Shannon's the guy that is never going to make detective.
Oh, no. I mean, to not spoil it later on down the line, but he has like a prominent... He's prominent later on in episodes, like way, way later.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they always make him out to be like he's this, like... He's not the smartest, but he has, like, the best heart. It's really weird.
They go to him quite a bit in the show. And it's clear that the people on the show liked him, so they kept him around quite a bit. But he has the line that I would change the episode title to this, Fu Manchu, because he keeps saying it throughout the episode.
Yeah, because they're looking for the dude.
They keep looking for this guy, and the description they give is a white guy in like his mid to late 30s with long hair and a big Fu Manchu. But he keeps saying it. He keeps saying, you know, big Fu Manchu, and he keeps doing it with his hands. He does it, like, over and over and over again. That's what I would change the title to.
Because I feel like during, what year was this episode? So this is 96. I feel like Fu Manchus were really big in the 90s. Like, do you think this was the writer or the creator's way of kind of being like, hey, Fu Manchus are fucking ridiculous, guys.
Well,
And only big, dumb white guys have Fu Manchus now, and no one should have a Fu Manchu.
Well,
and the fact that we call it Fu Manchus is a problem.
We should call it something else. Well, there's the other part...
Well, think about how racist that is.
A Fu Manchu.
Right? Like, it's basically probably... I mean, I don't know the history. We can probably figure it out, but... From what I know, is it used to be a facial cut that Asian men used to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us to just keep calling it a Fu Manchu, that white people do, we have to have some kind of racism attached to it. So I kind of definitely feel that like the Fu Manchu is definitely racist. But moving on.
Speaking of 90s trends, because basically the body is dumped in an alley, and the car drove off, and they chased after him. The guy who called in the suspicious behavior, his name's Ken Thornton. He's played by a semi-famous face named Patrick Fischler.
Yeah, he's the young kid, right? Well, he looks really young, right, in that.
Yeah, he's a dude that's been, like, on everything. Because I tried to figure out, like, what is he known for. But, like, yeah. He was on Lost and Mad Men and a bunch of shows and a bunch of...
Yeah, he's a really big character actor.
But the thing I wanted to mention is, the way they portray him is like a 90s punker or, like, rocker or whatever was very strange.
Yeah, they asked something.
And
I don't know exactly what they were going for, but...
They ask him, like, well, because Sipowicz talks to him, he's like, have you been drinking? And he's like, yeah, it's my life, I... try to sleep during the days because I work at night. I play bass for jaundice.
Oh,
and then Sipowicz looks at him and goes, jaundice. He's like, you wouldn't have heard of him. And it was just kind of like, for me, it was like a funny dig of like, oh, he's like punker culture or metal culture, this guy. They discover that the DOA is Dominic Landucci and his stuff was stolen, and they find that the car that they were chasing was Dominic Landucci's, so it was a carjacking and robbery and
murder.
The guy, Ken Thornton's freaking out because he thinks it might be a mob hit, because Sipowicz just says, without thinking, there's a OC family named Landucci, so the guy starts freaking out.
Yeah.
But they tell him to go in and get some sleep, and we get the opening credits, because this is NYPD Blue Balls, where we go through every episode of NYPD Blue. I'm Kirk, the other voice is Kyle, and this is the song to NYPD Blue. When we come back from the break... Donna has a conversation with Russell about her hairdresser.
And she has like a freak out moment and then has to be like, I need to talk to you about something.
I want to get through this story. Yeah, I want to get through this story real quick because they don't really spend a whole lot of time on it, and it's not extremely interesting.
It's just to set up Lesniak and Martinez's problems.
Because Donna has this hairdresser. She tells Russell her hairdresser's ex-boyfriend wants to run a robbery on her current boyfriend.
Well, is it a boyfriend or is it just someone she's sleeping with?
You think it's just a fuck buddy?
I think so. I think it's a fuck buddy that, like, she enjoys and, like...
Well, we all enjoy an occasional fuck buddy, Kyle.
But now that her boyfriend's home, you know, and he's a killer.
Well, yeah, because she basically says, I need to stop saying basically. Donna says her ex...
You basically should stop saying it.
Her ex-boyfriend was in prison for manslaughter, and he which is such a weird thing to say, so, like, nonchalantly.
Some of this shit is so crazy in this show, because they'll be like, yeah, my boyfriend got out for, like, a triple homicide. My boyfriend was in jail for 30 years for triple homicide, but he's getting out tomorrow, and I can't wait to see him. And it's like, wait, why are we letting people out for triple homicides? hey, manslaughter. Manslaughter means you killed somebody.
Hey,
why are we letting you out of jail?
Hey, we'll talk it. We'll talk it too. A double homicide.
How about this? If you kill one person, you don't leave jail. How about that? That's just a real rule that we have. I don't know.
It's also funny how it's like manslaughter. I think manslaughter is killed without, or murdered without the intent, because murder implies thought.
Murder's murder, man. Intent or not, you still killed somebody. It means you were not paying attention.
Hey, if that were the case, Vince Neil and Matthew Broderick would be in prison.
Okay, and I think the world would be a lot much better without more Motley Crue and Matthew Broderick Oh man, if Matthew Broderick was in jail, we would have skipped that great Godzilla movie that he put out. Oh, what a bummer.
Hey, Jean Reno killed it in that. It was his best movie since Leon the Professional.
Oh my god. Yeah. I always get Jean Reno mixed up with that dude that was in Armageddon. You remember the Russian dude who's in the space station?
Yeah, I can't remember. He was also
in... They're both foreign character actors. Like, they're both foreign actors who are, like, probably super... like, super respected in their, like, in their country, but here we just use them as, like, hey, we need a funny, a fuzzy foreigner, like, let's get him, you know, shit like that, but yeah, anyways, moving on.
What they do is they set up a sting for this hairdresser, where, because the ex-boyfriend doesn't really know her new boyfriend that well, they just have James Martinez take his place.
Yeah, he doesn't know what he looks like.
Which I found hilarious, because there's a line that made me laugh, because, they basically go over this story like three different times before they actually get to it. And when Russell's talking to the hairdresser, she says, well, he's not on parole, so we have to catch him in an overt act. Let me run something by my boss. And as she walks away, Donna goes, okay, well, I think they're going to run in a ringer for Louise. If you get James Martinez, he's really cute. Why the fuck does it matter how cute he is?
Yeah, that's weird. First of all, how the fuck does Donna know what they're doing and, like, the lingo? Like, she's talking like she's fucking Diane Russell over here. They're gonna run around, and then they're gonna switch a doodle it, and it's like, what the fuck? Like, Donna, you should just be typing and giving me my phone calls. Like,
well, cause especially
like, there's no need for you to be fucking Dick Tracy over here. Like, I don't need this shit.
Put down the yellow coat. Well, what's really ridiculous is, at the beginning of this episode, she goes to Russell, she's like, okay, well, my friend, she's in a situation that's out of my depth. Then, a couple minutes later, when she's talking about the case, she's like, yeah, we're gonna run in a ringer. It's like, fine, you don't have anything to do with this. You passed her off.
It must not be that far out of your depth.
And what they do is, they run over the story so many times. James is gonna come up, because the way it works out is this truck driver visits her, gets back in his truck, and goes out of town.
Like, his job is a truck driver, but he spends his days when he's in New York with her.
And before he goes out on big truck hauls, he parks his car on the street, or his truck on the street, goes up and bangs one out, and then goes out on the road. And what's hilarious was the other thing that
I love that. Sorry to interrupt. It's hard when we're on FaceTime, but I love that, like, little detail. he has to go bang one out before he hits it on the road, and she has to, like, let them know that. It's like, that's not important. Like, you don't, like...
Well, and the way she describes it is seriously, like, she says the phrase, he's one of these guys that, like, needs a woman, you know what I mean? And it's like, what does that mean? He needs a woman before he drives a truck? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's a pretty easy setup. What this whole thing's about, like, this whole long setup is just so that Lesniak can look suspicious of James. Then, when they're running the sting, Greg and Lesniak are in the van waiting. And she's like, why is he taking so much time with her? And Greg goes, well, he has to make it look real. It has to seem like he's knocking one out before he gets on the road. And Lesniak fucking goes after Greg.
Well, I mean, first of all, Greg's, like, the worst friend. Because there's no need to, like, there's no, like, he's starting shit just to start shit. Because when they come out and, like, everything goes down and all that, so Martinez ends up coming down. And everything happens, and they all jump on, and they catch the guys. Which I also find weird is the woman, the hairdresser friend, is, like, in the middle of this whole thing. Like, as people are being pulled out of the truck with guns on them, she's standing on the street, like, watching. Mm-hmm. Like, which is another thing that's crazy to me. It's, like, they're, like, they have no concern of, like, pedestrian life. Because, like, what if this turned into a shootout? There's just pedestrians everywhere, and they're just pulling up on these people. But... So Lesniak starts freaking out, and she's like, where's James? Where's James? Where's James? And all Medavoy has to do is, like, kind of be a dick and be like, he's right over there. Jeez, relax, psycho. But instead, he's like, oh, where do you think he is? Getting some more or knocking another one out? And it's like, James, like, Medavoy, you're the worst fucking friend in the world. There's, like, no need for you to say that shit, because you're only giving Greg, or you're only giving Martinez more shit to deal with later. Like, just because your wife hates you doesn't mean you have to make Lesniak hate him. You know what I mean? Even though they're, like, kind of breaking apart. But anyways.
And after that happens, Greg and James have, like, this heart-to-heart where, like, they're basically talking it out as bros about how the situation is. And What I found weird is, like, the phrasing that James uses was, I was not aware of this aspect of her nature. And then he says... She thinks I'm out there asking this woman out, which is a whole cloth fabrication. And I was like, why did they start writing him like Frasier? Like, just out of nowhere, they're like, by the way, right now we're going to make Martinez sound like Frasier for this scene. And then he's going to go back to Saudi like he always does.
First of all, Frasier's the shit.
I'm not discounting Frasier.
Frasier is a great show.
The main story, the only one that really matters, Bobby, Simone, Andy Sipowicz, they're looking into this homicide, and then they get a visit from this FBI guy named Mike Francis. And they've been observing this club that the Landucci guy used to go to, and apparently there's been some high-fiving and some hooting and hollering, and this FBI comes in and starts measuring and says, well, I can get a wiretap for you guys. I can set up a wiretap, and then all the information is yours, and we'll be set.
Yeah.
The next scene is them setting it up, and the real fun with this stuff is they're making fun of Mike Francis the entire time.
Yeah. He's a great character.
Like, he's basically a giant, like, egghead. Not egghead. What's the word? He's kind of...
bitch.
Yeah, he's Medavoy-esque. He's very Medavoy-esque. And there's a part where, like, the part where he leaves the first meeting with Fancy, and he's like... I got my equipment outside, and Andy just looks up and goes, he's got his equipment outside, and makes a face. And then when they're putting in the bug, and he's like, I gotta go take a piss, and he's like, look, man, I got prostate problems too, but if you don't get out of here, I'm gonna piss on your shoes.
I love how Simone and Sipowicz treat him. They basically treat him like garbage.
It's very similar to the... overarching theme that these guys don't really respect the FBI when they get involved.
Yeah.
Like, every time they do, it seems to be a disaster, or they don't know what they're doing.
And they definitely make it seem like the FBI is way more incompetent and inferior than them.
Mm-hmm.
and the way they portray this guy, you know, and like the way they like he's like a bumbling idiot and like he can't like he's an FBI agent, but like the action scares him, you know, where they're like whereas they're like not afraid of these mob bosses and can think on their feet quickly. Like they just kind of make it seem like the FBI is dumb and slow.
Because yeah, while they're setting up the wiretap, these two wise guys, as they call them, come in to play pool. So thinking on their feet, because Mike Francis comes out of the bathroom with a flashlight in his mouth, they pretend like they're robbing them and take all their shit. And I will say it was a little aggressive because they threatened to shoot him and shit like that. And Mike literally pisses himself and freaks out. And when they go to talk to Fancy about it, it's very funny because Andy and Bobby are just like, look, you know, shit happened. And
yeah, we had to rob him.
We
had to rob him. He's like, yeah, we had to rob him.
And Fancy,
we had to take stuff.
And Fancy kind of has this attitude of like, all right, well, I guess that's something we'll have to deal with later. And this Mike guy is like losing his shit. He's like,
yeah, doesn't he say like he's the only one who's going to be listening to the tapes? Like no one else is allowed to listen to it. Shit like that.
Well, he sets up this situation where he doesn't tell his bosses what happened, and his bosses will never hear the tapes because they'll talk about how they got robbed.
Yeah.
So, and then, like, they're trying to, like, joke with him and kind of, like, lay off, and at one point, Sipowitz says, do you have a plan, or are you just gonna sit there crying? And they're kind of jabbing at him and pissing him off even more. Later, when they're in their investigation, they meet up with him on the stairwell, and he, like, hasn't slept. Like, this situation has really rattled him, which they're like, why don't you get some sleep and just fucking relax? Because...
chill the fuck out, my dude.
Because as they find out, that wiretap was completely ineffective, really, because those guys had nothing to do with the Landucci killing, and they straight up admit, like, he was just a guy who read the paper and hung out with us. Like, he was not a hooked up guy. And the real comedy of this episode is those guys that they robbed go to that precinct to report the robbery.
Yeah.
So the dudes have to, like, scurry around so they can't be seen, and that's just funny shit.
And they have to, like, hide and shit. Yeah, that was interesting to watch.
Especially when they pulled the coat rack thing, where, like, they reach around the corner and bring the coat rack into the hallway and then put it back in. as the investigation kind of goes forward, they get a guy, like, this part's kind of just a misdirect, they get a guy who matches the description who committed a robbery, but they don't really like him for it because he has an alibi. And then, when they find Landucci's car, they find a phone number to a guy named Herman. Greg Herman.
Yeah, don't they find it on a newspaper?
Yeah, it's on a newspaper in his, like, footwell in the car. With his phone number written on it, and they find out it's his. And when they bring him in, it's like this mullet-wearing guy who, like... I thought these interviews or interrogations were really good, because he was, like, really nervous and really good at, like, clearly making up stories.
Yeah.
And then when they caught him on the lies, like, him trying to cover it up, he was playing a very good, scared, mullet-wearing dude.
Isn't this his second time on the show?
I don't know.
I think that dude you're talking about, I forgot his name, but the Herman, the dude that, like, I thought that this was his second time on the show.
Let me find out. I don't know for sure, but let me see.
Because I thought he played a dad that was super racist. No, for real. There was a dad where he was, like, super racist. Or am I thinking of someone else?
Speaking of super racist, one thing that kind of, like, it was a weird moment. There's a moment where Mike Francis is talking to Fancy about how fucked up this situation is.
Line up, Francis.
And he says the phrase, did you know how many of those Goombas' civil rights we violated? Which is like the weirdest sentence ever. One,
no, it's not, bro. It's the 90s. Racism's running rampant.
Mostly because it's like, when you hear someone complaining about or talking about civil rights, they tend to be like liberal and sometimes a little PC or whatnot. And then, but to have it start with the word Goombas before civil rights, it's like, and also for half a second, I always, like, forget that that's a slur. So I start thinking about Super Mario Brothers. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, that's a racist way to describe Italians. Also, speaking of racism again, do you feel like the portrayal of the wise guys was, like, a little too much?
Oh, they were definitely caricatures of what people think, but all of them are. Like, did we already do, I mean, all the episodes run together, but did we already do the episode where that one mob guy's son kills his other son?
Yeah, we did do that episode.
Okay, so that dad is a super stereotypical, like, I think he's another stereotypical, like, Goomba, because they make him be, like, the silent strong type, and then these guys are the other end, or the opposite end, but they're both stereotypes. They definitely do all the stereotypical, like, they do all that shit for everybody. Like, even when it comes to, like, black gang members or Asian gang members, like, it's always, like, Johnny Dragon if it's an Asian guy. And it's like they definitely do it with everybody. But yeah, this was more comically over the top than it was anything else. It was fucking ridiculous. They were like basically Lenny and Squiggy from fucking Laverne and Shirley. But they were fucking Italian mobsters.
I just looked it up. The guy that plays Mike Herman is in another episode, but it's later. I think it's 2 seasons from now.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay, never mind. My bad. I got confused. I know he comes back.
As it turns out, like, the way that story plays is Shannon and the other cop pick out that dude that did the stick-up because he looks exactly like the dude they were chasing. But then, when they bring in this Herman guy for the lineup, Shannon and the bike messenger who comes back both pick him out. So
yeah, because they picked another guy, and then this always happens in the episode where it's, like, mistaken identity.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's like, I didn't do it, blah, blah, blah. And then they bring in this new guy off of new evidence, and they put a fake mustache on him. And then it's kind of like, oh, wow, he did look, that is the guy. That's crazy. It's like you almost sent, like, the wrong dude to prison, and you're just, like, nonchalantly being like, oh, man, he almost got me.
Oh, wow, I almost
Buzz Bunny cartoon and shit.
I almost ruined that guy's life. Well,
yeah,
fancy
I almost
that.
Sent that guy to jail for like 25 years. Maybe even longer. Oh, craziness.
Oh, man. What?
Then all you need to hear is like the fucking goofy laugh.
What a Wednesday, am I right, guys? Did you see that game last night?
Damn, I almost gave this guy the death penalty. So the Knicks look pretty shitty.
That poor Zingas, though.
But the Rangers are awesome.
Oh, man. So, Mike Herman. I really liked his last interviewer and interrogation because he essentially just tells them, look, man, I borrowed money from this guy. He is a Shylock. Like, I borrowed money from him. Then he started roughing me up when I missed 2 payments. And then he picked me up and basically said that his time with me was done. And when I showed him my gun to protect myself, he just laughed at me. So I killed him. I thought the guy did a really good job. I think I've said that 3 times now. But he even says, like, he told me to just rob a liquor store to get the money.
Yeah.
And then at the end of admitting to killing him, he's like, I guess I should have just robbed the liquor store.
Kind of funny.
There's another great scene where the wise guys come back for their charges, and they say, hey, so have we got any leads on these guys? I'm like, no, but we found all your shit, and it happens to be less than what they said, because they were committing fraud, insurance fraud. And then the dudes who robbed them just show up into the police precinct, and then they lose it, they freak out, and they say, what are you, the Watergate burglars? And
I just loved when they came in to vouch their stuff and how crazy they were acting. And, like, they were like, yeah, we had, like, 4 TVs, you know?
We had 4 TVs?
I had $2,000 in my pocket. It was like, do you normally walk around with that much rock cash? Yeah. Yeah, we do.
And then they mentioned all this other shit that, like, I forgot what they specifically were. But even Medavoy was like, now everybody knows those things weren't there. So just fucking take your shit and go.
Yeah.
the last thing we'll talk about, which is kind of what these last couple episodes have been about, Andy takes Andy Jr. out for some more lessons.
Oh, yeah, because Andy's going to be a cop. Andy J's going to be a cop.
There's a moment where they mention his car, and he said the engine on the Caddy blew, and Andy says, don't tell Mr. Bucci that, it'll kill him. Which is a, you know,
callback to the Bucci case.
And also kind of just like a Marvel Cinematic Universe style reference to keep you interested in the past.
To keep it locked up tight.
And Andy tells a story that is supposed to provide evidence to his point about a toy store that sold machine guns that he was outside of at midnight when he was a uniform officer, and he almost shot a guy with a toy machine gun.
Yeah, because isn't he trying to, like, teach Andy just to know your surroundings?
Well, yeah.
The people, know your neighborhood, know what's going on. Just kind of keep your heads up on shit.
Yeah, he holds up his hand and he goes, people, places, what they do, and the time they do them. And he said, if you know those four things, you're ready to be a uniform cop. And that lesson, I thought, made, like, a lot of sense. And it was kind of, like, a pretty solid piece of advice. And then at the end of the episode, there's another lesson where they're walking by a bodega. And he's like, there's a bunch of guys outside there. There wasn't any this afternoon. And then Sipowicz tells him, oh, yeah, there's a guy. The guy who owns that bodega plays the horse races in his establishment so the guys don't have to go down to this area. And then he's like, oh, so that's why they weren't here? He's like, yeah, the horse races aren't on in the afternoons. And then they walk by a guy, and Sipowicz has an exchange with him. And then Sipowicz makes on-the-spot assumptions about the guy. Where he says, he's like, that guy's an oiler. He's a wannabe tough guy, but he doesn't really stand up if anyone pushes him. And Andy Jr. rightfully goes, do you know that? And then Sipowicz goes, I could be wrong. But I feel like with his first lesson, he almost shot a guy by assumption.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
So, like, it's kind of weird to have those two lessons in the same episode where it's, hey, you gotta know everything that's going on around your beat, so you don't end up making a terrible decision based on quick assumptions. Also, here's some quick assumptions about this guy I just met. Like, it was a weird combination. But it was also cool just to see Andy and Andy Jr., you know, getting closer, making up for lost time.
Isn't being a cop all about assumptions?
No, I wouldn't say so. I don't know.
So when someone calls and says, like, this is going on, boom, 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 and then you show up and you see what's going on, doesn't, like, just because you're human, the first thing you do is you assume things that are happening.
Well, that's why it's important to know that, and that's why I thought Cops was a pretty interesting show. Because on Cops, most of the time when they show up, they're calm, they're cool, and they're collected, and they start asking questions. And then, based on those, the way people answer, they then kind of judge how everybody's reacting to the situation and tries to get a full story about what's happening. This is going to be way too serious a topic. It's going to get way too serious in here. But the media coverage of them making poor, quick decisions, it far outweighs a lot of the reality, which is, most of the time, like, you call the cops and you're like, hey, man, there's a disturbance. There's a lot of people shouting and screaming and I don't know what's going on. The first thing they do when they show up is they start asking questions to figure out what's happening. They don't, like, bust in with guns drawn. It's...
But you're basing this off of Cops?
Well, no. Also, like, other shows and what I've heard about Cops and Cops that I've met.
Yeah, because those are shows, you know what I mean?
Well, no, like,
the other thing is Cops has a camera in front of it, so obviously they're going to ask questions and not just go in there like what we know them to do.
But I also, I don't have a lot of cop friends, but I have met cops and asked them questions. And they will be the first one to tell you, most of the time, when they get a call, they don't show up with, like, guns drawn and, like, ready to haul somebody in. The first thing they do is show up calmly and collectively, because that's how you de-escalate the situation.
So, I hope so.
But the thing that weirded me out specifically about Andy's talk is, like, Because he makes a very good point, which is, if you know exactly what should be going on in your area, you'll immediately know when something's wrong. Because you'll notice, like, hey, this doesn't seem right. But then he walks by a guy and he makes flat-out insane assumptions about him. And then just kind of goes, yeah, but you got to know everything that's going on around you. It was just weird to me.
No, I get what you're saying.
Anyway, that was Season 3, Episode 18, unless you got some more notes or thoughts.
No, I just thought it was really funny. I just thought the FBI agent and was really funny, and it's, and his, the way he played off with Andy and Simone was great. I thought they were really funny together. That's all.
Damn, that's a bummer.
Whatever.
So, I put out the post to send me your notes and thoughts about episodes before today.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy just sent it to me as we were recording.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot to read.
Okay.
He mentions that there are some flubs in the episode, which you don't notice unless you watch it several times. One, Andy complains that Francis can't install the bug into the wall, but if you watch Andy, he can't do it either. It doesn't fit inside the socket. He just keeps doing it over and over.
Yeah, that's true.
Also, when they go to steal the TVs, they're not plugged into anything and they don't have any cords.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, he mentions... This is Chris, also Blank and Stuff on Twitter. He mentions one of my favorite lines of this episode. It's one of my favorite Sipowicz lines, I think, so far. When they're in the meeting with Fancy and Francis, and they start arguing with each other, out of nowhere, Andy goes, you know what, you ought to be the groundskeeper at a miniature golf course.
Yeah.
And the guy goes...
And then Francis goes, miniature golf course? What does that mean?
Oh, man, that was good. He mentions the same thing about the FBI. They're not really flattering, wondering if Bill Clark doesn't like him. And he's probably the most important thing, often NYPD Blue can be serious and deals with some dark shit, but this episode always makes me smile, which is good, because that's why we enjoy the Blue, for the laughs and the drama.
The racism. This one's a funnier episode.
It's true. And, yeah, there's some very interesting racial situations in terms of the Italian characters. Any other thoughts from you?
No, not really. I mean, you pretty much covered everything. Metavoy's the worst wingman ever. but other than that, it's a great episode. It's one of the better episodes that we have.
I was just looking through the notes real quick again. He does mention one of the most honest line readings was at one point Sipowicz says "What a dick" as they're like as he's leaving the bathroom when they're running away from the guys when they're hiding from him. Sipowicz kind of gives a "What a dick," but it was just perfect. Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on iTunes, Stitcher, where you find a podcast, and AsherBrothersPodcast.com. We're on Twitter at AsherBrosPod, Instagram, AsherBrothersPodcast. Every other Tuesday, keep watching NYPD Blue. It's on Hulu, and it's on Amazon, so get to watching.
It's on Amazon, too?
Yeah, Amazon put it back up.
Because people probably went to Hulu to watch that shit.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know what? I'm watching them on a PS4. The Hulu app is much easier to watch them on than the Amazon one.
Yeah, fuck Amazon. Amazon lost me when they took it down for no reason.
Yeah. Amazon, you deserve this, Amazon.
Yeah.
Go back to your Man in the High Towers and your Marvelous Mrs. Maisels and your Mozarts
and your Goliaths.
And your Mozarts in the Jungle.
Shit. I'm going to go watch NYPD Blue and Handmaid's Tale, bitch.
And some South Park and some Community.
Handmaid's Tale's pretty good, Kirk.
And Always Sunny.
Handmaid's Tale's pretty fucking good.
I know, I feel like it'll give me anxiety. I don't know, I don't want to explain it. Anyway.
Oh, 100%. 100%. So, there's a lot of shit that they're talking about that's like, oh, that's happening right this minute.
Oh.
But yeah, it's really interesting.
Anyway, keep watching NYPD Blue. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you just need more NYPD Blue, you can always check out True Blue, the book written by David Milch and Bill Clark. It's mostly about season 1, 2, and 3, I think, but it's pretty interesting. You can also check out Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. It's 99 cents on Amazon. Just cut a section of what you would pay for your coffee and just get a smaller coffee. You don't need all that caffeine. I mean, come on, let's be real. I apologize to Chris Blankenstuff on Twitter for rushing through his notes. He also happened to mention that the gentleman who played Mike Francis, the FBI agent in this episode, was also in the episode from Season 1, From Hair to Eternity. So we had an NYPD Blue alum in the episode, and we forgot to mention it. Thank you, Chris. Please send in your notes, hopefully before we record the episode, or else it will be included in these footnotes. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you're listening to it. Thanks for listening to NYPD Blue Balls, and watch some more NYPD Blue.